What is going on, everybody? Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That's right, here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed, as we are taking a look across the NBA, breaking down all the movers and shakers with teams starting to rest their veterans or ramp up for the playoff push. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a writer for NumberFire, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a writer and editor for NumberFire. Brandon, we are into March, which means your favorite time of the year, March Madness, just around the corner. How are you doing?
March Madness is not my favorite time of the year.
I was saying it wholly sarcastically because I know how much you despise having to watch bad basketball.
I mean, it's fun a little bit, but the thing with college basketball, Jim, is a lot of the tension comes from mistakes. And look, you know, these kids are young. I get it. It's fun, but I don't necessarily want to see someone dribble a ball off a foot to end the game. I've seen it before.
With D'Angelo Russell, you mean, in the Lakers?
I've seen kids step over the line with, like, trying to inbound it. It's just strange.
Yeah.
It's fun. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's fun, but
I don't care about good basketball.
For the NBA.
I can't identify good basketball as well as you are able to. So, like, I think it's fine. I'm into it because I kind of have to be, like, you know, for work and stuff. We will have a March Madness podcast coming up on Monday, so getting ramped up for that. We have Ed Fang,
nice segue,
and Keith Goldner will both be there as well. We recorded them last year. I thought it went awesome, so back with them this year. We'll also have a Final Four betting preview podcast, so a lot to look forward to.
Ooh.
On the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed in the coming weeks. So make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app as well. And if you go to iTunes, you can win yourself NumberFire Premium for an entire year. All you got to do, go to iTunes, search for the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed, leave a comment, and rate the podcast. Once you do so, you are entered to win NumberFire Premium for an entire year. It gets you access to all of our premium content, all of our premium tools as well, which can help you with the upcoming MLB season, with NBA DFS, and also no more giveaways until then, but it's huge for March Madness. So go to NumberFire, get hooked up with Premium. We do have our winner from February. The username Harambe Was Good is our winner for February. We pick at random. So Harambe Was Good, you are our winner. If you're listening and you wrote that comment, hit me up on Twitter at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. My email is also on the site. If you are not on Twitter, let me know who you are so I can get you hooked up with your premium subscription. Brandon, with that mentioned, are you ready to take a look across the NBA?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's do it then, because we're going to start things off on it's sad that someone gets hurt with Tristan Thompson going down for the Cavs, but it opens up the ability for us to use Larry Nance Jr. I'm pumped about that. So let's talk about Tristan Thompson here, the injury with him being down for a couple of weeks here for the Cavs and what that does for them in DFS.
Yep, Tristan Thompson's been ruled out for 2 weeks, so at least like another week and a half since that news broke, due to an ankle injury, and that means the Cavs are quite thin in the front court because Kevin Love remains out. Seems like he's getting healthier, but they're not really changing that timetable, so I'm not expecting him to come back early. Jeff Green's also been dealing with some back issues, to just take note of that there. And so Larry Nance is going to start at center. Moving forward, according to head coach Tyronn Lue. Without Thompson on the court this season, the Cavs have an offensive rating of 107.9 and a defensive rating of 112.7 for a net rating of almost -5. And I'm pretty sure I said without Thompson on the year. That's with him. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, it would make sense if they were worse without him, but they're actually worse with him on the court, so it's a boost, and I never like to point out that a team might be better with someone who's hurt, but with Thompson on the bench, those marks are 110.8, 108.2, and 2.6 respectively, so they're a positive net rating without Thompson on the court, pretty decidedly negative net rating with him on the bench.
Maybe they should just give the reins over to Larry Nance full time.
Yeah. So the Cavs have been 7.4 points per 100 possessions worse with Tristan Thompson on the court this season. Now, if we look to NBAWowie.com, since February 11th, which is when Larry Nance made his Cavaliers debut, the Cavs have an offensive rating of 119.6 without Thompson over 196 minutes, nearly 400 possessions there. The defensive rating is 105, so a net of nearly 15 points. That's pretty huge. In that split, LeBron's usage is 34%. Jordan Clarkson is at 25.5%. He's second. And Jeff Green's a distant third at 19.5%. In terms of FanDuel points per minute, LeBron way up there at 1.55. Larry Nance is in second at 1.27. Clarkson's at 0.99. So not a huge list of hyper-efficient players, but LeBron and Larry Nance definitely stand out. Now, Rodney Hood has started two of the past three games for the Cavs, but he's been at 0.79 FanDuel points per minute, a usage rate below 18%. If we look at things without Thompson in this split, but by all accounts, this team does not miss Tristan Thompson, with Larry Nance especially there to replace him. So Cleveland's recent net rating is just 0.7 over their past 15 games. They're ninth in offense, 19th in defense. I don't think that's going to be indicative of how to handle this team moving forward without Thompson. As the Cavs are top nine in pace to help with that improved defense a little bit. But the overall takeaway here, LeBron James, Larry Nance getting huge boosts.
So let's talk about Nance here, because we know the price will go up. I believe he was 5,800 on Monday. That's going to skyrocket. He played 32 minutes in that game, and he pumped out 47.5 points on FanDuel. If we know he's getting 32 points, let's assume that's kind of the baseline here. What's an appropriate price where it makes you think a bit harder about just plugging him in automatically?
If he's getting 32 minutes or points?
Yeah, 32 minutes.
Okay. Well, I just looked ahead and saw his FanDuel salary for Wednesday. It's a bit higher than I would like to pay.
What is it?
It is $7,500.
Interesting.
I don't think he's priced out necessarily. Mm-hmm. But that is...
That makes you think about it. That's kind of what I was asking for is, what salary makes you think about it? That makes me think about it.
Yeah. I mean, against Denver.
I'm going to pay that.
Yeah. 70, that's a pretty big, 58 to 75 after that one game. That's pretty sharp pricing.
I guess the one reason you could say no is that we're not guaranteed he'll play 32 minutes every game without Tristan Thompson. Does that worry you?
I mean, he's supposed to start at center, so that helps. But, I mean, we can't guarantee anything for any potential, role player stepping into these bigger roles. We can't get ahead of ourselves, but, man, that's a price hike.
I'm still going to pay it because of the matchup. I think for that specific game, I will go there. I think where I would start to hesitate is beyond that. That's a really. I think the total is like 230 in that game, and it should be. So
I'm not like that. That's probably a good way to put it. Like, I'm not sure Larry Nance is an 8K player.
Sure.
In pretty much any matchup, he can. He obviously put up. 47 plus FanDuel points, so he can exceed that. But probably not something I want to bank on. So 7,500 is about.
Okay.
It's about my tipping point, I guess.
So sharp pricing is what we're saying. All right. Kudos. Well done, guys. I think that for me, it's pretty much Nance and LeBron. I haven't formed a level of trust with any of the other guys. Is that the same thing for you? It's just kind of those two who wind up on your rosters?
Yeah, I've pretty much only ever played LeBron this year from Cleveland and occasionally like a Kevin Love or Jeff Green if they've been thin in the front court, but it's just Nance and LeBron for me. That's really all I'm going.
I'm fine with that, too. So let's move on here to Rajon Rondo, because the Pelicans are only a game behind the Blazers for the three seed in the West. We'll talk more about this race later on, because it's super interesting out West. So they're a game behind the Blazers for the third seed. But that also means they're only three games ahead of the Clippers, who are in ninth. So they're in this glob, and they need to win games. And it kind of seems like the Pelicans have been leaning more on Rajon Rondo to get them there. Over the past five games, so, one game, chopping off one game after the All-Star break, Rondo is averaging 33.1 minutes per game. He was at 26.1 minutes per game in the five games before that. And if you've got Rondo on the floor, he's clearly going to have the ball in his hands. That's kind of the reason you have him out there. And since the All-Star break, Rondo ranks fifth in the league in touches per game at 88.3. The only guys ahead of him are Russell Westbrook, Giannis, Ben Simmons, and Marc Gasol. Rondo, not priced like those other guys, as he is $6,900 on Wednesday's slate, which is a bump, but still not super high regardless. And Rondo is converting those touches into fantasy points. He has had at least 35 FanDuel points in four of these five games, allowing him to hit 5x value four times. He's been at 6x value three times and 7x twice, although again, that was at a lower price. If we're looking since the break, Rondo is averaging 1.06 FanDuel points per minute, which isn't bad for his price. He's not quite on the same level as Anthony Davis, obviously, and Drew Holiday, but he's definitely getting the job done and giving us a third piece to target on this very fast and kind of good Pelicans team. Rondo does so much beyond scoring, but he is getting some field goal attempts up. He's racking up assists, grabbing boards too on a high-paced team. I dig him quite a bit, even as his price is going up. But Brandon, what about you? Are you willing to pay the elevated tag for Rondo? Again, he has $6,900 for Wednesday.
You know, I love point guards who I know can score 20 points. That's not really in Rajon Rondo's realistic range of outcomes, but he's a unique asset in that he goes out and seeks those assists.
He could have 20 assists in a given night.
Yeah, he wants those assists in his game log. He's a good rebounder, at least statistically, for DFS purposes. That's all I care about in this conversation. So, you know, he's not one of these mid-level point guards who initiates the offense and then goes and sits in the corner and maybe shoots a three. He wants, like I said, he wants those assists. He gets those steals, those rebounds. And, you know, it definitely helps that the Pelicans are at least average in offense over their past 10. But what really helps is that pace. Easily the fastest team in the NBA in that split. So, you know, I'll pay that price whenever the slate forces me to spend down a bit at point guard.
Yeah, and $6,900 is kind of in that middle range where I think that especially you don't like to pay that much, but I think with all that he does, it does kind of change the equation a bit. And having them be in the thick of a really tight playoff hunt certainly does not hurt. He's playing a lot of minutes. I think he's great. I don't know. I guess the one thing would be if I need to go Rondo or spend down a bit more to get Anthony Davis or Drew Holiday, I'd rather try to spend down. Yes. Like I'd rather not have that opportunity cost. Is that the same thing for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the key phrase right there is the opportunity cost of taking a Rajon Rondo at point guard, someone who needs assists and rebounds and steals, whereas someone else can just score 25 points and make it a whole lot easier. And if that guy who scores 25 gets some assists and rebounds and steals as well, he's got that higher upside. I mean, Rondo's a triple-double threat, but it's not always a huge triple-double with those points.
And so he's kind of like a guy you can target in this range. I like him as long as it doesn't cost me too much as far as the rest of my roster. That's the kind of the way I would phrase that there. Before I move on to talking about the Lakers without Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart, do want to mention that FanDuel has introduced a brand new way to win your fantasy contests. It's called Beat the Score, and it's as simple as it sounds. Just hit the target score to split the prize pool with everyone else who beats that score. And if no one beats the score, everyone gets their full entry fee refunded. Same thing if everyone beats the score, so you kind of have a little bit less risk in there. Let's say it's a $25,000 contest. If only one person beats the score, they get the full pot. If it's two people, they split it, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You are competing against the score instead of competing against other players, which is a complaint I have heard decently often. People don't want to compete against people with more time on their hands. You don't have to. Playing against the score here, which is really good. To check out Beat the Score, go to FanDuel.com, click on NBA, and then select Beat the Score in the box where you'd normally toggle between tournaments, multipliers, and head-to-heads. Again, that's FanDuel.com for more information about Beat the Score. Let's dive in here to our second trends, talking about the Lakers, because Brandon Ingram going to be out for a while. Josh Hart is currently out as well. So that's opening up a lot of things. Lonzo Ball back in the mix. We've got a very different Lakers team than we had 2 weeks ago. So let's talk about them here, Brandon, and what you see with the Lakers in their current state.
So Brandon Ingram has been ruled out for at least three games, which puts him out through Sunday of this week that we're recording. He's got a groin strain. He could be out longer, but at least three games. So we get some action without him out there. And Josh Hart's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks with a broken hand. He got surgery on Friday. Seems like things went well. But, you know, that opens up usage in minutes for the Lake Show here. With Hart and Ingram off the court since the start of the Isaiah Thomas era, which came back on February 10th, the Lakers actually have an offensive rating of 125.5 over 200 possessions. So not the largest sample, but definitely not, you know, a 40 possession sample or anything like that. And the defensive rating's 105. So that's a drastic net rating right there.
These are still the Lakers we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Those
numbers come from NBAWowie.com, of course. And you know, we look at Isaiah Thomas specifically. His usage rate is sky high, 36.5% over 148 possessions, with 1.3 FanDuel points per minute without those two on the court since joining the Lakers. Julius Randle, his usage rate is 26% in this split. He's produced 1.43 FanDuel points per minute, just 51 minutes, but still, we know that he can produce when given the opportunity. But that FanDuel point per minute average doesn't even lead the team for Randle. That actually belongs to Lonzo Ball, who's just above him at 1.44 FanDuel points per minute, despite the lower usage rate of just 16.4%. Lonzo's doing that on hyper-efficient shooting, which is great to see, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to stick around. His effective field goal percentage since the All-Star break over five games is 72.4% on a usage rate that's actually just 14.4% since the break. Prior to that, it's been 43% on a 17.6% usage. So great to see the efficiency, but you always want that volume to be there when you're targeting players for DFS. But overall, still, Lonzo Ball's averaged 37 FanDuel points per game over his past five. Julius Randle's averaged 39.5 in that span. And actually, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has played big, big minutes here as well. 43 and 41 in his past two games with 39.2 FanDuel points per game in those. He's at 35.9 FanDuel points per game over his past 10 as well. And in those two games without Hart and Ingram, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, of course, averaging 42 minutes, as I mentioned. But Kyle Kuzma's also there at 35.5. Lonzo Ball, right below 34, Julius Randle's at 33.4, Isaiah Thomas 29.6, and other than Brooke Lopez at 25.9 minutes per game, nobody else has played at least 15.5 minutes per game in those, so it's a very tight rotation, and again, a pretty strong offense over the somewhat larger split without Hart and Ingram on the court. So the Lakers back in our good graces for DFS for sure with this tight rotation.
Yeah, and I will take that every time. It's high efficiency, from a fantasy perspective at least, and I guess from a real perspective, as you were mentioning, but also a lot of minutes. I love that combination. Let's talk about Lonzo here, because you mentioned that the efficiency has been unsustainably high, but we also know at the same time he has the ability to get a lot of steals. There's a lot of upside there. He gets some assists, some rebounds. He's up to 8,000 for Wednesday's slate. Is that too high for you, given the low usage and the super high efficiency from a shooting perspective he has had?
He does not fit my build necessarily. Okay. I mean, you look at the FanDuel points per game over his past few, 20.4, 49.9, 41.7, 35.9. Like, at a price of 8,000, those are fine, aside from the 20-point game, of course. But the field goal attempts are just 9, 12, 5, 4, 8. Like, mm-hmm. you can't just bank on a triple-double every night from assists and rebounds and just barely getting to 10 points. So, I mean, he's scored 10 points, 18 points, 8, 13, 9, 9. Over his past six games. Like, yeah. I don't want to spend 8,000 for that very often, unless I'm doing a full on game stack.
Yeah. And for me, I think that I would like it if those were like high efficiency shots, but most of them are threes, which do give him a little bit of extra upside. But like, if they don't go in, he can flop really easily, which is kind of what happened on Monday against the Blazers. He only finished with 20.4 FanDuel points there. I was an idiot. Went there because of the splits without those guys you were talking about. Didn't work out. And when the price is 8,000 as opposed to 7,200, which is what it was on Monday, that worries me a lot. So I would think that Lonzo, for me, is below guys like KCP and Randall. Are you getting the same kind of feel here?
Yeah, and that really comes down to the position, too, because yeah, he was,
you know, if he like were, KCP is at an awful position. That really does help his stock.
Yeah, I mean, if Lonzo were like a small forward, not, sure, you know, just in terms of eligibility, you have to kind of take this volatility because there aren't many options, but you can spend 8,000 on a different point guard and get a whole different bag, guy who actually shoots the ball.
Like we were talking about Rondo being 6,900, I'd rather do that. For
yeah,
sure.
I'm not saying they're the same player, but
right,
statistically with what you're expecting in terms of shot volume and how they accrue their fantasy points, very similar, and Rondo's a lot cheaper.
And there are similarities. That's kind of what you're saying, and I would fully agree with that assessment too. Let's talk about the Jazz. Derek Favors was a late scratch on Monday for the Jazz with neck spasms. He is questionable for Wednesday. I think that the Jazz are worth discussing, even if Favors does shoot up, or does shoot up, whoops. Implications are beyond what I was trying to go for. Sorry, Derek, didn't mean that. Suit up would make a lot more sense. Sorry, Derek. But even before the Favors injury, the Jazz were keeping a super tight rotation. They're another team that has to make a push. You know, they're outside the playoff hunt right now. They need to win games. And they are playing their guys heavy minutes as a result. If we're looking at their past five games, Donovan Mitchell is averaging 38.3 minutes per game. Rudy Gobert is up at 36. Joe Ingles, 34.6. Ricky Rubio, 31.3. Favors was at 28.7 in his previous four leading into the injury, which is pretty much in line with Jay Crowder. So it's those six guys who are just on the court pretty much all the time. With Favors out on Monday, Jonas Jerebko did start and play 20 minutes, but that's about it. We just kind of know the minutes are largely going to go to those big four guys, and then we can concentrate on them here because they're all very interesting. If we're looking since the All-Star break, the Jazz have an offensive rating of 101.3 with a 103 defensive rating. Their pace has also come back down to 94.3 possessions per 48. So, you know, they've chilled out, but there is still big value in those minutes. Gobert's price has gone way up, but I think it's justified as he is at 1.22 FanDuel points per minute since the break. Rubio at 0.91, Mitchell 0.89, and Ingles, shockingly, 0.68. If we take Favors off the floor, like if he were to hypothetically miss a game, Gobert goes all the way up to 1.37 FanDuel points per minute. Mitchell does get a big boost too. He's at 1.07. So I would like Gobert, even if we do have Favors play on Wednesday. You know, if he were good to go, I wouldn't really care. Gobert's price is up, but he's just producing in big minutes. But if we take Favors off, I want to be even more aggressive on Gobert. He's playing huge minutes, monster efficiency that goes up without Favors, and the team needs him to keep doing that. I would also be on Mitchell. If Favors were to miss more time, I would back off with Favors healthy because the splits for Mitchell not quite as good despite the big minutes. And I'm down with Ricky Rubio now that he's showing life again post-injury. He had kind of a slump initially when he came back, but it looks like Rubio's starting to get back in that groove he had before the All-Star break. So I still want to target the Jazz more actively in pace-up games where opponents can keep up with them. But these guys are just getting tons of run, so I'm buying a good number of the individuals, and I think anecdotally it makes sense too. So, Brandon, which Jazz asset do you find yourself gravitating towards most often?
It's generally Rudy Gobert, mm-hmm. And then I talk myself out of it and prefer a different center that night. But, I mean, you know, Utah, they can be a very efficient offense, but over their past 10, they're 24th in offensive rating, mm-hmm. which I don't like. And then we know we want the pace-up matchups because they're 29th in pace over the past 10. But even in a pace-up spot, if your offense isn't super efficient, it only helps so much. And frankly, you know, other than Gobert, none of these guys really pop out to me.
Okay.
Like I'm fine with like Mitchell and Rubio, but again, I don't really want to play Ricky Rubio at that price point, a guy who doesn't necessarily – we're talking about all the point guards who, like, right. Lack of these assists and stuff. And I I mean, Joe Ingles is now 6,400. I do not want to
spend, I don't know how that happened, honestly.
I do not want to spend 6,400 for Joe Ingles. So, like, just kind of by process of elimination, I want to play Gobert first out of these guys.
Sure.
And maybe Mitchell.
Yeah.
Because of that, the minutes. But, you know, I'm not finding myself with too much Rubio and Ingles right now.
We can both agree that, that Rudy Gobert is the best basketball player on the planet, right?
I cannot confirm that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you cannot dispute that. I'm shocked and offended. So I'm just going to leave that there. You have broken our friendship, and I'm sad about it. Yeah, okay, fine. If we exclude Dragic, I think the discussion changes. I'll let you think about your sins, though. Let's move on to our third trends here. The Clippers continue to lose guys. I don't think this is the ideal time to have that happen. But regardless, we got a very banged up Clippers team. We got to discuss what they look like here. So, Brandon, what do you see with the Clippers in their current state? Because dudes are just dropping like flies.
Oh, it's not necessarily just that they're getting injured.
Wallace's contract thing was weird too. I didn't quite understand why they didn't pick him up for the full year. But
yeah, I don't either, Jim. I
feel good then.
All right, so the Clippers are doing weird things. We know that. They're half game out of the playoffs in the West, but they're kind of playing and making decisions like they want to lose, at least off the court. First there's the Danilo Gallinari. He's got a fracture in his shooting hand. He's going to miss at least 2 weeks. That's unfortunate and independent of their decision making. Again, I don't know if this is last week or the week before at this point, but they're still without Avery Bradley for most likely the full season, so that opens up a lot of opportunity. And you would think that that would go to guys like Tyrone Wallace and CJ Williams, but they chose not to sign Tyrone Wallace to a contract for the rest of the season after his 45 days in the NBA expired on his two-way deal. So he's back in the G League.
Where's Wallace, String? Sorry.
He's in the G League.
Yeah, well, that's a better outcome.
Yeah,
better that way.
CJ Williams here, also sent back down to the G League, and to replace them in a word, they signed Sean Kilpatrick to a 10-day deal. He played 11 minutes in his debut, and on Tuesday he played 4 minutes against the Pelicans. So, I'm just having a hard time figuring out what the Clippers are doing, and just kind of by necessity, they've really tightened up their rotation. Especially in that most recent game on Tuesday, Austin Rivers played 40 minutes. Tobias Harris played 39. Lou Williams played 35. Montrezl Harrell was at 31. Milos Teodosic, Sindarius Thornwell, and DeAndre Jordan each played at least 27 minutes. And if you look at this team without their key players who they've lost for some reason or another throughout the year, you know, Blake Griffin, Wallace, CJ Williams, Pat Beverly, the list goes on and on. If you look at the Clippers without those key players since the start of 2018, they've actually maintained an offensive rating of 119.6 over 624 possessions with a defensive rating of 113.9 according to NBAWowie.com. So that means they've got a great offense and a pretty, pretty awful defense, and the pace of 101 is about as fast as you'll find as well. So very DFS-friendly still, but now a very tight rotation as well. With the lack of bodies, we can assume Lou Williams will have a big role. That always bears out in the stats in that split since the beginning of 2018. Without all those extra bodies, he's got a 30.8% usage rate. And actually, Montrezl Harrell's come a long way. He's second on the team in usage with a 26.9% usage over 433 possessions. He's actually tied with Lou Williams and FanDuel points per minute at 1.24. So that's pretty intriguing there. Still, Tobias Harris and DeAndre Jordan top them both at 1.29 and 1.28 FanDuel points per minute, respectively. And, you know, like we saw with the Lakers, the rotation is short. In two games without CJ Williams and Tyrone Wallace, Harris and Rivers have both averaged at least 38 minutes per game. Lou Williams is at 34. DeAndre Jordan's at 32. So, the Clippers, again, very DFS-friendly here. Fast team, good offense, mediocre to bad defense with a tight rotation. So load up on those Clippers.
Yeah, it's a good team both for them and their opponents, which we talked about, you know, before. Game stacks here are certainly in play. I want to talk about Austin Rivers quickly because the minutes are awesome. I love the minutes that he plays, but the floor is atrocious even with those minutes. I have a hard time really plugging him in as a result of that floor. What about you? I know you talk about the minutes, but is he a guy who fits what you're looking for often?
Not necessarily. The field goal attempts are okay. He's been around 13 or so over his past few games. He's not, you know, you need field goal attempts, but you also need these guys to make good on those field goals. And he doesn't really fill it up in a points column, hardly ever. So, yeah, I'm with you. Rivers isn't really at the top of my list. It's more about, you know, Lou Williams, even Montrezl Harrell, DeAndre Jordan, yes. Tobias Harris. So I would probably leave Rivers would be kind of my last ditch option here for the Clippers. So I'm with you for sure.
And the good thing is that the other guys are pricey, but it's justified based on that offensive rating, the defensive rating, the pace. Everything lines up so well that even though Tobias Harris is like 8K now, like I can pay that with a decent amount of confidence and not be overly worried about it. So I agree. Everyone else here is really cool. I'm fine paying Lou Williams' price, and that's something I had been hesitant to do earlier this year. So I agree. They're a great team to target, both offensively and with their opponents. So give me all the Clippers games that I could possibly handle. Let's go from there. Let's move on to the third trend here, talking about Paul Millsap. We did discuss Millsap's effect on the Denver Nuggets last week, but didn't really talk a ton about Millsap himself, and we should probably start doing that now. Head coach Mike Malone said before Tuesday's game that Millsap's minutes limit was being elevated to 28 minutes. He had foul trouble, Millsap did, and played just 20 minutes, but you know, knowing that we can get 28 minutes out of him at his price is pretty intriguing. In four games since the return, Millsap is boasting a 22.5% usage rate, which is second on the team behind Will Barton at 23.5%. That allows Millsap to average 1.30 FanDuel points per minute, which is pretty monstrous no matter what the sample size may be. And as a result, he has been just blowing past value, even in limited minutes. Got a price hike in his second game back, so we'll omit the first game. In the three games with the elevated tag, his value marks have been 6.77x value, 4.95x, and 5.36x. So, yes, he even did top 5x value in a game where he played 20 freaking minutes. For Wednesday specifically, he's in the back end of a back-to-back, which is concerning. But again, he did play just 20 minutes on Tuesday. The matchup with the Cavaliers is intriguing. But to counteract that, Millsap's price has gone up to $6,900. At that price, he would have to hit 5X value, or if we look at that price, he would have hit 5X value just once since his return. Not as intriguing. I want to buy into Millsap right now because the production has been so good, but I also realize the minutes cap his ceiling, the price increases are making that more of a burden. So what are you doing, Brandon, with Paul Millsap in the immediate future?
Well, if he's averaging, 1.3 FanDuel points per minute over his past four at 28 minutes, you know, the math works out where he can definitely hit that 5X value at 6,900, especially against a team like Cleveland, who's got better defensive splits without Tristan Thompson, but still far from a defensive stalwart. So, you know, for Wednesday night, specifically, I feel like that price is justified, but if the minutes are capped, I hate playing guys who have minutes caps because the upside's capped, and then if they struggle in a few minutes, then the floor just drops out. So that's my biggest concern. I definitely know that Paul Millsap can hit that value threshold,
right?
If that's kind of your question, so like he can do it, but you know, I haven't really broken down the slate well enough.
Sure.
But the permanent efficiency is just...
It's stupid.
It's good enough. It's definitely... I mean, he's not Nikola Jokic right now, but he's close.
Nikola Jokic is not Nikola Jokic right now, so that's okay. So, yeah. I think for Wednesday specifically, I have a little bit of concern because it's back into a back-to-back. I would like to get some kind of assurance that he'll play a full workload, but I feel like having the Nuggets in the playoff position that they're in, I feel better about that. Would you also feel okay just because they kind of need him so much?
Yeah, they definitely need him. They need to figure out how to play with him, especially if they're, you know, playoff bound. It's such a, I forget what word you used, but that Western Conference is like
it's a glob.
Everyone's just so close. So I do think that, you know, once Millsap's minutes restrictions gets lifted, like
full speed ahead,
he's going to be a fantastic asset, but I still don't think that he's necessarily priced out. Okay. At 6,900.
All right. I feel better. Let's just stack this, this Cavs Nuggets game on Wednesday. Let's ride, baby. Let's talk about the Spurs here. No Kawhi yet, but we do have additional injury news with the Spurs because Pau Gasol sustained an injury. Brandon, we have to discuss what this team looks like without him because they just had a lot of injuries recently.
Yeah, their injuries keep piling up. Pau Gasol collided with his brother on Monday, hurt his shoulder, according to Tony Parker. Yes, that Tony Parker. Gasol said it was bad, so doesn't, you know, sound super great. And actually in that same game, Rudy Gay blew out his left eardrum, which makes me sad and hurt.
Yeah, I didn't know like how that worked. I heard it and it's like he came back, right? Like he re-entered the game?
No, I don't think he came back, but I think okay. he could have.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a ugh.
Is that like repairable? I don't know how this works.
I do not know.
Man, all right.
But it's another good, just another good learning experience to use the word "arl." I mean, Rudy Gay could be back on Thursday against the Warriors, but it's very possible that Gasol misses a few games, and we need to check in on the Spurs anyway because it's been a while because they're gross for DFS, and we got to see if there's anything that we can use to our advantage with Pau Gasol and Kawhi Leonard off the court since the start of the new year. The Spurs have an offensive rating of 113.5 with a defensive rating of 109.3 for a positive net rating of 4.2. So good offense, not super great defense, but still a positive net rating. Usage rates obviously lead with LaMarcus Aldridge at 29.9% over 731 such possessions. But Manu Ginobili's actually been a heavy usage option at 27.6% over 300 or so possessions in 2018 without Pau Gasol and Kawhi Leonard. Then there's Rudy Gay at 25.7%, DeJounte Murray at 24.1%, Tony Parker at 22.8%, and Joffrey LaVerne at 23.3%. So there's a lot of names here with really high usage rates because this lineup's been in flux so much, but it also means that a lot of these guys can carry usage when given the chance. So you have to kind of be willing to take a gamble on these Spurs whenever they're thinned out, which they are right now. DeJounte Murray actually leads the team with 1.4 FanDuel points per minute in that split. LaMarcus Aldridge and Rudy Gay at 1.25. LaVerne is fourth at 1.13, and that's a strong rate, and he could surely benefit from Gasol's absence, but he played just 7.1. Just over 7 minutes on Monday night against the Grizzlies. It was actually Davis Bertans who played 19.3 minutes in that contest, including essentially what was the full fourth quarter. He had 17 points in that game. His per minute efficiency for Bertans is not stellar, just 0.8 in 2018, but he had been starting lately, including 7 of the past 10, including whenever Gasol missed some games. The big issue really is that no Spurs averaged even 30 minutes per game over the past 10, and that 10 different Spurs have been between 20 and 30 minutes. But speaking of those past 10, the Spurs are 8th in pace, which is cool, but they're just 3-7 in the win column. This team really needs to figure things out. They're sitting in the 5 seed right now. Things are not looking good, and I really do think that they need to be riding LaMarcus Aldridge and Rudy Gay if possible, but someone like Bertans, if he gets put back in the starting lineup, could provide a little bit of value.
They're like a better version of the Kings with those minutes. Like, that's just miserable to have everyone clustered in that range.
Yeah, it's not great, for sure.
Yeah, LaMarcus Aldridge.
It's very, very frustrating.
Yeah. LaMarcus Aldridge, coming out that ankle injury, I don't really have any concerns lingering for him. He didn't, you know, his first game back wasn't necessarily great, but going forward, I think I'm okay being aggressive with him. Are you beyond that ankle injury as well?
yeah, if Gasol's out, I'm just going to ride with LaMarcus Aldridge and see what he gets me. That's just kind of the way that you got to play this situation.
Yeah, I think the other guy who's hard to decipher here is Murray, because he has the huge efficiency, but the price has gone up, and the minutes still aren't necessarily where you'd want them. I am not super inclined to pay it, despite the efficiency being so high. What about you? What are you doing with Murray?
Probably avoiding him at that point guard slot. You know, the minutes aren't capped, but they're kind of capped.
Yeah.
The field goal attempts aren't always going to be there. You know, you mentioned that efficiency. Like, he can put up 50. He just put up 52, 40 right. points. Like, he can do that, but man, it's 7,700. Like, that's too pricey.
And there are other point guards who can also have that same upside with better minutes. So I think that's kind of a better floor, I guess is a better way to put it. So that's why I don't gravitate towards Murray. I think that Aldridge is kind of the guy here for me. So hopefully Rudy's ear is okay, because that just sounds miserable. But yeah, not so fun. Let's talk about the Grizzlies. You had talked about the Grizzlies with Mark and Pau Gasol colliding. And speaking of not fun DFS teams, the Grizzlies, they're tanking. And it certainly doesn't help that the injuries just kind of piling up here. They're super thin, which can lead to a lot of minutes for the healthy guys. So we should see what we should expect with Andrew Harrison and Mario Chalmers slated to miss around a week or so. Tyreke Evans also ruled out for Wednesday, though he could be back kind of soon. Marc Gasol is a potential rest candidate. So let's keep Gasol out there for a second and take Evans and the other guards off the floor. If we do that, their offensive rating is 98 with a 111.8 defensive rating and a pace of 97.8. It's pretty bad. From a fantasy perspective, Gasol averages 1.14 FanDuel points per minute. Jamichael Green is at 1.11. He did log 33 minutes on Monday night with a bunch of those guys out, although Jarrell Martin was also out. He is questionable for Wednesday night with a knee issue. Dylan Brooks, Mike Henry, Kobe Simmons all have the potential to be value plays, but they're also averaging 0.61 or fewer FanDuel points per minute in this split. That's not hyper attractive no matter how many minutes they are playing, especially at high leverage spots in the board. If we look at Martin, he's at 0.6 FanDuel points per minute when he's out there, so he's not even super attractive if he can play. And Gasol is also subject to rest days, especially with the Grizzlies playing three games in the next 4 days. So if we take Gasol off, their offensive rating slides down to 97 with a 118.8 defensive rating. They're going to get torched. Green is still at 1.06 FanDuel points per minute in this split, but it's so hard to believe he'll be allowed to play heavy minutes once the game is out of hand. No matter how many bodies they have, I don't know why they would have him playing 35 minutes when they're down by 40. It's kind of just grim across the board. So we do want to target teams that are forced to funnel minutes to just a small handful of guys. But it's so hard for me to get excited about any of these individuals on the Grizzlies. So, Brandon, I want to toss it to you. What are you doing with these Grizzlies and all the injuries that they have? Because it's really hard for me to get excited.
Do you want to guess Memphis's offensive rating over the past 10 games?
95.
A little bit better.
Okay, I went low on purpose.
Yeah, 96.8.
Oh, goodness. See, I was going intentionally low, and it wasn't that much better.
Defensive ratings, 109.4 for a net rating of negative 12.5.
That's good.
I mean, the pace is obviously pretty terrible as well. I guess it's a little bit better. They're up to about league average over the past 10, but that's again, small sample for something like pace. But
yeah.
It doesn't matter if you get 35 minutes if you average 0.6 FanDuel points per game because your team can't score.
Right.
And you're getting trounced. So, I mean, I wish I had like a really strong takeaway here. I wish I had one of these players who I was like really anxious to play, but I'm kind of not. Maybe I'm missing something here, but I'm fine missing out on a team like the Grizzlies, especially on like a 7-game slate on Wednesday. Maybe like a Kobe Simmons punt play, but.
Well, I feel like you said you didn't have a strong takeaway, but I feel like it is a strong takeaway to say you can ignore those minutes because there's no juice to them. Like, I think that is a takeaway. What's that?
It just feels like non-committal. I feel like I always got to have like a really, really strong take.
That is a strong take. Say, ignore these guys who are playing minutes. Minutes are gold in DFS, but ignore them anyway because the Grizzlies are so trash. Like, I think to me that's a valuable takeaway. Like, yeah, I feel better because that was the sentiment I had too. I don't know what guy I want to play here, even though like my process is, hey, minutes. I should want these minutes. Gobble them up. I just don't want to do it.
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, it's like, I feel like this happens to the Grizzlies every single year, though.
It does. It was like Mario Chalmers playing like 43 minutes 1 year for like a 10-game stretch, and it was pretty fun, honestly.
One year, like 2 games ago, they had 8 healthy bodies to play. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably... You know, if one of these guys happens to fit in as like my eighth or ninth guy in a FanDuel lineup where, hey, this guy's probably going to get big minutes and he just fits, then maybe. But yeah, I'm not overly anxious to roster anyone on the team who's scoring 96 points per 100 possessions.
Yeah, there's no one we're prioritizing here, which is a shock about the Grizzlies. But Brandon, let's cleanse the palates, wipe the slate clean, and talk about someone who's a bit more fun, tiny bit, little bit. Damian Lillard, because we don't get to talk about players who are just torching souls. Damian Lillard is doing that right now. So let's talk about him, talk about his price, and sort through just the disgusting stretch that he's on right now.
Yeah, I mean, we don't, like you said, we don't really talk about just like, oh, this guy's just on fire, but I'm doing it because it's time to talk about the Blazers, and really that means Damian Lillard. Dame is on fire right now. He kind of has to be for this Portland team. They've got a 95% chance to make the playoffs, according to NumberFire, sitting right now in the 3 seed. But, you know, Lillard is easily the primary reason why. He's 4th in the league in offensive win shares, 6th in overall win shares. If you look at his touches per game, he is 9th in the NBA in touches per game since the start of February, which is not overly surprising by any means, but he's 5th in usage rate in that split again since February 1st. He's taken, he's accounted for 33.3% of Portland's possessions in that span. Again, not super surprising, but he's averaged 47 FanDuel points per game in those 14 contests since February 1st, 8th most in the NBA, 2nd behind only Russell Westbrook at 52.9 FanDuel points per game among point guards. On FanDuel, Lillard ranks 3rd in the NBA in field goal attempts and 3-point field goal attempts per game in this split. He's 2nd actually in free throw attempts, earning 9.1 extra chances per game, and he's a fantastic free throw shooter. So like that's a very underrated way to unlock floor and upside if you get to the free throw line. And he's playing nearly 37 minutes per game. And if you look at his 14 games since February 1st, Lillard has hit at least 6 times value in 4 games, 5 times value in half of those games, 4 times value in 11, and never falling below 3.5 times value. That gives him a floor and a huge ceiling. He's got 3 games over his past 14 with at least 58 FanDuel points. Of course, all this comes down to price. If he's up there, you know, with Russell Westbrook in terms of pricing, none of this really would matter. But he was 9,700 on Tuesday night. He hit 4.6x value despite scoring 37 real-life points because he played only 32 minutes in a blowout over the Knicks. But with Portland needing wins for playoff seeding, again, they're the 3 seed by 1 game, but they're also 3.5 games from the 8 seed. I'm just not sure how comfortable you can be fading Damian Lillard. Very often, you know, with a sub 10K price. So we'll have to see what his price is for that next game. But if he's below 10K, he's almost a no-brainer for me.
Well, I think the good thing too with Dame is that it's not just that he's like has a high floor, but the games where he hits his floor are kind of predictable. Like it's not a shock. Like games where he bottoms out are not games you're surprised. Like he had a game against Charlotte on the 8th where he was 6-22 from the field. You don't expect that to happen, so he fell short of value there. The next one was against the Jazz. We talked about how good their defense has been, their pace has been low. That one makes sense. Sacramento, not a game where you expect them to hang tight. That one makes sense. OKC, 5 of 18 from the field. It makes sense that he would, you know, have a, if he has a poor night, you're going to fall short. But, like, you don't expect that again from Dame. And then, like, last night, like you said, a blowout against the Knicks, and that's fully within the range of outcomes. So as long as it's not a game where Portland is just going to have it in hand by the fourth quarter, or it's a great defense or a super slow-paced team, I really see no reason to avoid him. His floor in games outside of that, even when you consider his price, has been just phenomenal. So I agree. I think that, like, the number of touches he's getting, the minutes he's getting, I have a hard time avoiding him. And especially if it's like a matchup that he had against like the Lakers on Monday, like, just give me as much Dame as I can handle at that point.
Yeah. And like Portland's, you know, again, the three seed, like, they're fighting for playoff position, but they're not an overpowering team necessarily. Over their past 15, right, they got a 4.1 net rating. So, like, they're good. You don't have to worry about that team getting blown out necessarily, but, you know, they're not the Rockets with a 14.3 net rating or anything crazy like that. So you can feel comfortable with Dame pretty much any game.
Yeah, I fully agree. And again, there are situations in which maybe you don't want to go there, but those are going to be the exceptions for the most part. And they have to be kind of extreme for me not to want to use Damian Lillard. Let's talk about the Chicago Bulls here to wrap things up. I was all excited to discuss them because they're a bad team. They're a tanking team that was giving players predictable minutes, which is kind of one of my frustrations with tanking teams. But they were kind of going against that. But now the NBA has stepped in, and they are forcing them to play Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, which gives me a headache, honestly. I would assume they would still be starting Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, David Nwaba, Lauri Markkanen, and Bobby Portis over the next four games and then changing it up after that. But we'll see. But that group together is super interesting. We got to see this lineup for the first time on Monday, and they promptly got blasted by the Celtics, even with Kyrie out. So it wasn't a good start, but it's also a tough little defense to face. So if we're looking at these five together, small sample, but in 25 minutes, they have an offensive rating of 118.9. Their defensive rating is 94.9. It's possible this is just a small sample, but that doesn't really sound like a total tank job. The downside here is that the usage has been pretty spread out with those five. If we look at just that lineup, LaVine's usage rate is 22.6%. Portis is second at 22.2%. Dunn's at 21.2%, and then the other two are below 20%. If we broaden it out, we take out Lopez, we take out Holiday, those other guys who had been resting. Portis is at 1.19 FanDuel points per minute. LaVine is at 0.99. Dunn, 0.95, and Waba, 0.88, and Markkanen, 0.71. Now, Portis was 7,400 on Monday, and he did flop. Now we have to worry that he'll lose some minutes to Lopez again. But if we got guaranteed minutes for Bobby Portis, he'd be well worth it at his levels of efficiency. And Waba, to me at least, is pretty appealing because, A, he's a small forward, B, the minutes are so steady, and he's still cheap. He was 5,300 on Monday. But if Holiday does come back into the rotation, that could also ding in Waba a bit, taking away that the best asset he has, which is the minutes. So Portis and Waba were primed to be my two favorites here, but now we kind of have this uncertainty again. So Brandon, I want to toss it to you. We don't know what to expect with Lopez and Holiday being forced back into the rotation. So how are you handling this Bulls team?
I'm probably going to take more of a hands-off approach because we can't know for sure what's going on.
Yeah.
With the minutes. If anything, probably target the backcourt like Chris Dunn. Mm-hmm. That's probably what my instincts would lead me toward. I don't want a team – I mean, this team clearly wants to lose, but now they have to play Robin Lopez and right, some of these older guys. So, you know, it's kind of like the Grizzlies where – or, you know, just these bad teams that I don't really want – to attach my assets to, just 100.5 offensive rating over the past 15.
Which is still almost 10 points higher than the Grizzlies.
Yeah, it's gross. So yeah. I'm not really, I'm kind of fine not playing the Bulls right now until they figure out what they're doing.
Yeah, I think I'm more okay with them than you are. Specifically like Zach LaVine I can go to, because his price is kind of kept in check by the fact that like he hasn't been able to like be fully unleashed all the way in each game. So I think that helps me, but at the same time, there are so many concerns around, like, okay, I don't know what they're going to do with minutes. It's possible Holiday could take away from Levine. I would assume that does not happen. I would assume Nwaba is the more likely guy to get dinged there. But, like, there's still that possibility. So I'm more okay with them, but I'm still very hesitant to go here. It does pretty much nullify Portis for me because his price shot up so much. And Waba, I think if I were guaranteed to get the minutes still, I'd be fine with it, but I'm not guaranteed that anymore. So maybe Dunn, maybe Levine, but that's pretty much it for me. I'm higher on them than you, but even I have a hard time getting really excited here. I love the NBA, and I think I wish they would just let these young guys play for DFS purposes, strictly for that. I know that the tanking rules have merit, but just let us play these young guys, man. That's all I ask. Predictable tanking.
Yeah, we'll see a lot of young guys in March Madness. So
yeah,
we'll get some of that.
Yeah, the Bulls, a little bit better than an NCAA team. So at least they got that. The Grizzlies, not willing to go that far with them, though. Brandon, that's all we have for this week. I think that we're getting to the point in the year where things get a little bit headachy for NBA because there can be some late scratches, guys sitting without a lot of warning. So any words of wisdom for people as they try to navigate these waters here over the next couple of weeks?
Get that FanDuel Scout app. And yes. Just if you can't be around for a lineup lock, consider playing guys who you feel very comfortable with, who aren't really at risk of these last minute scratches.
Or consider playing MLB once the end of the month rolls around. Set lineups, sure, baby. It's beautiful. Yeah. That is all that we have for this week. Do want to send one more reminder, though, that we do have a March Madness podcast coming up on Monday, breaking down the tournament with Ed Feng of the Power Rank and also Keith Goldner of Number Fire, previewing the tourney. We have a regular PGA podcast next week and also our NBA podcast on Wednesday as well. So a whole lot will be popping there. Subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. If you leave ratings, that helps a ton. We really do appreciate it. So all those are certainly appreciated on our end. Brandon, if people want to find you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gudula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Good luck with your NBA DFS lineups for the coming week, and we'll talk to you again next week. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.